It's all about the Cloud Engine, Cloud 2020, and managing cloud. Coming up next on Cloud Chronicle. Hey, welcome to Cloud Chronicle. I'm Andy McCaskey from SGR News, and today is a red letter day because I have both of the hosts of the show here. Let me throw it over to Patrick Bashar. And Patrick, you can explain yourself of where you've been here the past couple of weeks.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, no doubt. Well, you know, they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And, you know, when we talked about the right start date for the show, I definitely planned to commit to being here in person, being able to talk to you live every week. But as such, it wasn't quite possible. So last week I was at a kind of a unique trade show that we'll talk about a little bit later in the episode, I think. But maybe we'll open with some news out of Google around the general availability of the compute engine side of things on Google. So, you know, it's going to tie in nicely to some of the things that went on in the conference, but I think Ophir is going to talk to us a little bit about sort of what that means and what that announcement entails. Ophir?
Patrick, so again, good to see you on the show. Andy, you as well, of course. And yes, it's great, great news coming from Google this week. They announced their general availability. And the most, you know, amazing thing about Google that they are coming with, you know, their robust infrastructure and giving you the price or, you know, the charge per minute. So when you provision a virtual machine on the cloud, in Google Cloud, you'll be charged based on the minute, 0.13, 0.14 cents per minute. Very interesting stuff. They also, you know, something that is very interesting to see there is the large persistent disk that you can provision and support 10 terabytes, you know, 10 times the industry standard. So, you know, very interesting thing come from the Google cloud side. And I think that, you know, you have your own story from Cloud 2020 about that.
I do. And it's sort of interesting that you see some of the same things happening on the Google side that you do in the Amazon. I think when you look at raw infrastructure, I don't want to make it sound like it's a simple problem, but providing that service is one thing. But then the tiers of service on top of that infrastructure that you see Amazon Web Services provide, things like Glacier. I think we've talked about, you know, those kind of services, you know, load balancing as a service kind of thing, some of the CDN stuff they do. If you look at Google's offerings, you're seeing the same thing. You're seeing Cloud SQL. You're seeing services built on top of infrastructure that will differentiate them as just a pure, you know, infrastructure as a service play. And for me, that seems to be where the future is. So at Cloud 2020, it was a conference really focused on kind of, you know, cloud 201 instead of 101, for example. So I think the intention was to bring in a group of people, and I think it was done by invite only, I'm not sure, that sort of had a good base of cloud, at least theoretical understanding, that could jump into a conversation that was, you know, a few more steps ahead of what you typically get at a trade show, where you're trying to, you know, cover definitions and kind of cover that common understanding. So it was nice to have a one-day event that could sort of, you know, jump in running in terms of the content. And that's sort of what we saw. And one of the more lively discussions was one around, you know, in the next 5 or 10 years, what will we see from infrastructure as a service providers? Will it truly be only those organizations that can compete and scale, like Google, like Amazon, as the clear winners? And will we see some of these smaller offerings drop off? Or is there room and is there a market need for these niche players to cater to specific industries, you know, regulated industries or what have you? And so, pretty fierce debate there. Obviously, nobody knows exactly what the future will hold. I think it's pretty clear that the organizations that represent massive scale will do very well. They probably will be the clear winners. And to me, that's Amazon Web Services, Google, maybe Azure as a third, right? We know the resources Microsoft have behind them for sure. Whether they throw them at Azure or not over the long term is of course something strategic and something we'll see in time. But, you know, it's pretty clear to me they will be among, you know, the handful of sort of go-to service providers for infrastructure and platform as a service. But you know, we'll see. There were some good cases made for niche players as well. So you know, I'm not sure what your opinion on that is, but to me, it sounds like, you know, it makes a lot of sense.
You know, a lot of things that we don't know right now, but basically we see Google and we see Microsoft, you know, these major tycoons that, you know, takes a great play in this domain. I think that the niche player will come on top of this cloud, and actually the brokerage, you know, there will grow up very, very soon, I think. Amazon already doing, you know, platform as a service features, but their partners or solution vendors that, you know, are developing upon this, their APIs are doing a great job for their users, and they will figure out, and they're also already figuring out, that the partners are actually a very important player in this game. So this is where I find, you know, this niche player coming into play, just upon this, you know, big platforms that only the tycoons can actually, you know, bring to life. Yeah, this is from my side, I can say. Andy?
Did people kind of anticipate this? Is this kind of something that's a big surprise, or was this kind of eventually going to happen?
Yeah, I think everyone really anticipated it. You know, the news of Google getting into the infrastructure as a service game is old, and they've been working with, you know, lots of pretty premier customers already, kind of in a somewhat closed, not completely GA kind of situation. One of the things I learned that I didn't know at the show was that Netflix are already backing up everything they do on AWS into Google Compute Engine. So you know, that's more of a strategic choice for them, but I'd imagine it also has something to do with working with Google and making sure that they can support the capabilities they need. And, you know, what a better sort of beta poster child than Netflix, of course, who gets all the attention on AWS. So, you know, it's strategic for Netflix, but it does underscore that the offerings from Google have been ready for some time. And, you know, I've just gone GA now, but I think, you know, kind of it's not real new news that this was about to happen or that it happened, you know, in the last couple of days.
Of course, the big news has been this week, the seminar that Nuvem put on, talking about managing of all of this.
Yeah. So just before we recorded this, I came from the webinar with Ophir over at Nuvem and his side of the fence, and they're always great to work with. Our guest this week was, or this month, I guess we try to do them around, you know, every month, and so far they've invited me back for each one. So I'll continue going as long as they'll have me. It's fun, and I get to learn lots as well. But we are talking with Joe Weinman, who works over at Telix in a strategic kind of way, but also has wrote a book called Cloudonomics. And, you know, our tendency as cloud practitioners is to say, yeah, okay, the cloud brings you, you know, increased agility, increased, you know, time to innovation, that sort of thing. But Joe really tries to put some fundamental justification to those, what do we call them, you know, those kind of off-the-cuff statements that we make. He tries to really wrap some objectivity around them and proves them through mathematical theory. And so it's really interesting speaking to somebody who doesn't take those kind of values for granted and wants to actually substantiate them. So his book's a fantastic read if you like math, especially. If you don't, it becomes a little dry at points. But he does a great job of summarizing things as well and talking about, you know, how that sort of looks in the context of things. So I'm a bit of a math nerd, so I enjoyed the whole thing front to back. But yeah, it was a great discussion, and then we took questions from the really engaged audience of the webinar, and I think it turned out really well. What do you think, Ophir?
Yeah, it was really interesting from our side. It was a very successful session, and you know, of course, Joe knows to speak and he knows how to you know to run the things outside. The people that actually you know just studying and are not proficient on the cloud will gain something from his complex view, and he takes you know to the level when you see you know this his slide and you understand actually what he's saying, you know, taking examples for other industry like you know car listing or car rental. You know, I know Joe for the last 2 years, we had several discussions about what is the hybrid model. Is there a room for a hybrid model? And he started from you know talking about the basic thing that's saying consistent workloads, you know, that you know and you can anticipate put them on a consistent infrastructure, you know, something that, on something that you can actually benefit from the cost. When you go outside to the public cloud, you actually pay more if you will take it, you know, on a consistent basis. So it takes thing, not, you know, as you said, not like, you know, the buzzwords public cloud will win, but let's go to the actual practical stuff and see if, you know, the actual e-commerce site or, you know, just the blog, just a simple blog will actually get the benefit of going to this, you know, public cloud, like for example, Amazon Cloud. So it's very interesting, you know, to hear the, you know, this kind of thought leadership and information that you get from a person like Joe. And, you know, the next webinar will be also very interesting, discussing high availability in the cloud with Nati Shalom from GigaSpace. Has a lot of experience in this grid computing, you know, how it was called 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, you know, Joe's a big proponent of that hybrid cloud, and it makes sense when you hear him talk through his theory, because as you suggest, if a workload's demand is fairly uniform, then, you know, is the public cloud the right place for it? Maybe there are other factors that go into just than workload demand, but that should be one maybe quick indication that if my demand for this app, if I've got, you know, the same number of users day in, day out, that's probably a harder justification to move to the public cloud than something you have where there's big peaks and valleys in your usage, right? And so for that reason, he's a real big proponent of hybrid cloud, and it makes a lot of sense to me. It's just, you talked a little bit about this notion of a cloud broker before, where, you know, something inside your organization can facilitate that decision-making, or at least help you with that decision-making process. Does it stay in my on-premise traditional data center or private cloud, or does it move to the public cloud? What are the conditions that have to be met to move it? Can we even cloud burst like that today? Not really. It's more of a theoretical thing. We're getting closer, I think, with some capabilities of sort of the ecosystem around public clouds and some of the APIs themselves. I think we're getting closer to this notion of cloud burst, but I don't think we're quite there. But the theory behind it all makes total sense, and I'm really looking forward to that capability, you know, getting further this year in 2013. Hopefully we see something where that notion of cloud bursting from whatever environment you're in now to the public cloud, especially, that's the use case I'm interested in, becomes more of a reality.
Some of those advantages offset by the increased management complexity, whatever savings you might have.
Yeah, that's just it, Andy. That's a great question. I think that's a question everyone's asking. And I think there's a role to be played by this Instratius RightScale-like entity that manages multi-cloud deployments. I think there's capability there for tools like that to help you make decisions. So to be more than tactical, but to be a little bit strategic as well. So, you know, I hope we see that down the road where, you know, you can sort of characterize or profile workloads and how they're used, and it can say, hey, this is a great fit for the public cloud, or even watch the usage of that in your environment and say, once you sort of tip the scales on usage, or once, you know, this entity watches the use of your workload and sees these spikes and valleys and say, uh-oh, you know, you better watch, there's probably a better way of doing this, and that better way might be the public cloud. So, you know, today, does the management overhead offset the potential of using multi-clouds? No, I don't think it does. I think it's a huge pain in the rear. But, you know, by the end of the year or by the end of a couple of years, I hope that it changes.
It makes sense what you're saying. I can go over, you know, and talk about not only, you know, the manner of the world. So on the technical perspective, there is a very, you know, great challenge, you know, talking about interoperability, to move from cloud to cloud. There are no common concepts right now. You know, the virtual machine on Azure, not necessarily you will have the same capabilities, the same configuration on Google Cloud for that matter.
So, definitely.
You know, the high level strategic thing, like what is the workload? What are the manners? Can I move it in-house? Should I put it, you know, on public cloud? But eventually it comes to the point where, you know, will I be locked in when I'm buying, you know, my own traditional stuff to put it in-house? And do I have the skills to go to the public cloud? So it's still an emerging, you know, it's still an emerging industry. It's evolving every day, but, you know, the concepts of, there are the clouds outside and I can use them on demand, this is the most, important point of, of the basis of this discussion.
Right. No, definitely. And I'll get a quick plug for the company I work for, AppZero, in here, because one of the things that we do is we take workloads, and it's Windows only today. That'll change a little bit maybe later this year or early next year. But we take workloads, and what we consider a workload is the application and not the virtual machine. So kind of, where we find is picking up an application and moving it to an instance on a public cloud. Because you're exactly right. You can't take a virtual machine from a competing cloud and import that into another. Never mind a seamless way, there's no really way to do that at all. So what we do is we focus on that application instead. And it's a very unique approach. It's one that people have a hard time wrapping their head around until they see it work. But it is very, very cool. And it's one of the reasons that really drew me to AppZero. So, but you're absolutely right. I mean, that notion of cloud bursting and inter-cloud operability is a challenge for lots of reasons. It's the reason we see a lot of standard bodies emerging, right, to try and nail down a standard. Whether these vendors will conform to that as a base level standard, I don't know. I have a theory, and it's not very popular, but I'll throw it out there anyways, because I think it makes sense in that when you're this early in a technology, whether you call it a revolution or an evolution, I don't really care. For this point, it doesn't matter. Are standards a good thing this early? And what I mean by that, will standards stifle innovation? Because I think we're seeing rapid innovation from many different infrastructure as a service providers, especially. Will the enforcement of standards slow that down such that, those organizations have to conform to a base level standard? Or, do we think about standards a little bit later in the game where we have kind of a base level of functionality already established? It's a good question. I don't know the answer, but my gut feel is that we may be a little bit too early for massive standardization, at least at this point.
If you look back at the example of good enough technologies opposed to high performance, and I'm thinking specifically of Ethernet in the early years as opposed to token ring, and it's like the adequate technology over the long haul, if it's got the economic drivers, tends to win out. Is that same thing possible in the cloud environment?
I think the technology that matches what people really want to do is the one that wins. If it's fancy whiz bang, but it costs 10 times more, there'll be use cases for that for sure. And we can talk about sort of the different technologies within networking as good examples of that. There's some really high-end networking technologies that, we don't see in public clouds yet, and it's probably due to economics. I'm not sure. But definitely not a fortune teller, but I would think computing or consuming compute is becoming largely about economics. And we're looking at, how can I do more for less and free up my internal staff to innovate rather than administer, right? So that's kind of one of the main theories. And I think economics plays a big piece in that. So if the cloud computing, platforms or providers of tomorrow adopt, all the super sort of high-end technology that we see coming out of R&D labs and that sort of thing, it's going to increase that cost, right? So I think there's a happy medium there. So I expect that we'll see, just the sort of just right technology emerging as a standard, and maybe some of these niche players will go into some of the more, more sort of, exotic technologies to serve special sort of niches of folks.
Ophir, as we begin to wrap things up, I understand some pretty exciting news came out of NUVEM this past week.
Basically, we know that NUVEM launched its analytics to support Azure cloud users. Basically, as we know, Azure is native, at least what Microsoft is saying, it's a native enterprise grade cloud. It's built for the enterprise. It comes from the notion that in every enterprise in the world, there are Microsoft technologies like Outlook, SharePoint, etc. So basically, to burst out to Azure clouds, it's native. It's native nature. So NUVEM comes and help with his big data analytics for the Azure users to get a hold of what are the workloads, infrastructure-wise, what are the workloads that needs to be moved to public cloud and what needs to stay on-premise. So it's not a, you know, a pure hybrid cloud where you can scale out, scale in within your on-premise, but you actually can take some of, you know, your needs and put them on a public cloud, or maybe try on the public cloud and bring it back to the on-premise. And in order, and you talked about complexity just, you know, 2 minutes ago, and in order to get a hold of, you know, what's going on there, to get the full visibility of what you can do, NeoVim actually gives you tools like, you know, one of the most interesting stuff that we did over the last year is the utilization heat map. So, you know, a graphical user interface, you can see, you know, the points where you are, bursting, where you are, where you have consistent workload, and, you know, graphical manner like that can help you get a hold of a complex thing like clouds and, you know, a lot of resources that you are running. So together with Microsoft, we have really great partnership, and, you know, with the support of Microsoft guys, we actually worked very hard over the last few months in order to be able to bring our big data analytics to the Azure cloud. If you have any questions, Patrick, you know, regard that to be very simple to answer, I think.
One of these times, maybe what we can do is a bit of a shared tour of NeoVim on Azure or anywhere. Really, you can decide kind of how you want to characterize and showcase it. And we could do I could do the same thing for AppZero. It wouldn't take me very long. Usually, a quick and dirty demo of what we do over at of AppZero. I mean, it's all about reducing the time. So, of course, our demos are very quick, and we can illustrate concepts probably in, you know, 5 to 8 minutes. So, if there's something you can do somewhere similar, maybe we can think about that for a future episode of Cloud Chronicle as well.
I just love this when you get to do the episode planning right in the midst of an episode and so forth. Jens, thanks very much for joining us here today. Ophir, any final comments?
We covered great issues this session, and Google comes with great things, and the overall industry actually mature, you know, very very slowly, but it's for sure getting there.
You know, the format of the show here kind of precludes us from talking about all the news of the week, but we try to hit the highlights. We try to hit the things that both Ophir and I have been involved in that we can speak intelligently about, those sort of things. But certainly we'll try to cover all of the big news week to week. Next week, I will be working with AppZero Engineering in Ottawa again. So I'll try to join. We'll do our best. If not, maybe I'll have some pre-prepared content that I can send over and we can air as part of the episode. But as is the life of a practitioner, I guess. So thanks for joining us. And I think that's all for me. Thanks, Andy.
Okay. Thanks to both of you. Thanks also to you for joining us here on Cloud Chronicle. Join us next week here on SDR News.